Welcome to the Calgary Sessions. This is episode number 83. I'm your host, Jeff Humphreys. Today's guest, I'm going to give you, you don't know this, but I'm going to tell it to you now that you're sitting here. You're the first person that I actually just sent like a cold email out to get on the show.
Really?
Yep. So usually what's been happening is the guests on the show are like in my world somehow. You know, they're in my phone, they're just associated in a network I have. And then what also is happening, the guests are telling their friends like, oh, you need to meet this person.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking about, I just want to go like outside of my network and just try and find somebody cool in Calgary. So and I don't research anybody, like I don't do any research, but whatever I Googled, your name came up. And then I started like looking into what you're up to. I was like, well, she fits. So I literally went to your website, sent an email to, what's his name?
Peter.
Yeah. I was just like, hey, Peter, you don't know me. I have this little podcast. Here's who I've had on. I don't know if Holly'd be interested. And here we go. So this is how this one happened. So thanks for being on. So anyways, go ahead, introduce yourself, name and who you are.
Well, I'm honored first that I was your first cold email. My name is Holly Singer. And I am a candle maker and business owner of Milk Jar Candle Company here in Calgary, Alberta, that I started 6.5 years ago in my kitchen. And we have now grown to a team of 19 staff members, and we have a warehouse in the central northeast of Calgary. We do so much more than just sell candles. We teach candle making classes. You can fundraise with Milk Jar. We're also a refillery. So you can bring any vessel. You can bring even different candles, like old candle vessels that we didn't even make, and we'll fill them up. And you just pay by the ounce, and it's kind of a more sustainable way to get your candles and not throw your jars away. And the biggest thing about Milk Jar, though, I would say, is it's really how we connect with the community and how we are really trying to create more inclusive spaces and really kind of promote what inclusion means to be in a workplace. And we are an inclusive company, so a quarter of our staff at Milk Jar have a disability that helped make the product. And from its inception, since I started Milk Jar, we also have donated $1 from the sale of every candle and diffuser to nonprofits that support children with disabilities, and also to organizations that also create inviting and inclusive public spaces, such as Skipping Stone and Inclusion Alberta. And in 6 years, we've donated over $236,000, which is incredible.
Crazy. So you can, for people that are listening right now or watching, they have an understanding of why you caught my attention.
Yes.
You've been doing something very different for a relatively short amount of time. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you have, like, you're purpose driven.
Yes.
And that is kind of like this thought process that's been in my mind lately. So when I was doing my research or trying to find somebody, I was like, oh, this all fits. So that's how it happened. You've never seen these, which is awesome. Because you did no research. I did no research.
Yeah, that's the way I like it.
So what I like to do is I like the guests to go back as far as they want to go.
Okay.
How they grew up, where they grew up, what inspired them, what was just what you were up to, how your parents or family did or didn't inspire you. Yeah. And then we'll kind of weave a path to where you are today. And then hopefully just kind of connect some dots along the way to, you know, so people understand what makes you tick and why you're able to do what you do. So
totally.
Take it back.
Okay. So I was born in Victoria, BC. So I am not a Calgarian. But I moved here when I was 21. Mm-hmm. I went to UVic right out of high school. And I did 2 years at UVic and then really wanted to be in the kinesiology program.
Yep.
I loved sports. When I was younger, I played softball for 7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. I just loved that. Kinesiology. I love science. I was pretty good in school.
Yep. Like, were you playing all sports when you were a youngster? Like when you're, 5 to 12, did you play everything or what were you doing?
Was I? I mean, I played tennis and I swam. I didn't like soccer. I didn't like running. That's probably why I chose softball.
Yeah. It's like you short stand sprints. Around.
You stand around a lot and you just do short sprints. I played a decent amount of sports. I had a really nice upbringing. I played piano. It wasn't very, well, I was okay at it, but I didn't practice a lot at it. I don't think that was really my forte. But sports kind of interests me. I love science too. When I was growing up in high school, I was good in biology and like chemistry. So when I was in university, I was like, oh, kinesiology is kind of like science, human movement, and it's more at the macro level, not the micro level.
Yeah.
I like learning about cells and stuff. I remember I was like, oh, I don't know if I like this part about biology, but like learning about how muscles move and mm-hmm. how the human body works and all sorts of things like that. It kind of interests me more. I mean, really, you're trying to pick a degree at 20 years old. So you're trying to be like, oh, mm-hmm. but your parents are asking you, what interests you?
Yeah. What did your parents, did they introduce you to a bunch of things, whether it's like music or sports, or was it kind of driven just based on your interests and they would kind of help you get there?
I don't even know if I had a lot of interests. Like, I think my parents, I was actually a really, really shy kid growing up. Very, very shy, which is pretty shocking for people to hear now because I can...
Because you seem very comfortable.
I can talk people's ear off. I remember being a kid and I was so shy that... And I didn't have a ton of friends growing up when I was younger. I had a couple really close friends, but my sister, who's just a year older than me, had a ton of friends. And my mom would always be like, Leslie, let your sister play with you and your friends. And my sister would be like, oh... Like, be so frustrated that she'd always have to bring me around. Like, to the point where my mom signed me up for having a pen pal
no way.
In London. Yeah, pen pals used to be a thing because there's no internet. Mm-hmm. I'm 34, so yeah, the internet what came out when I was like maybe 10-ish. Yep. So yeah, when I was like maybe 10, I don't know how long ago that was.
The internet came out like 95, 96. 90,
right, Windows 95.
Yeah, right around there.
Yeah, and then, but I don't think, I mean, it was slow. There wasn't a lot to do. Yeah, it wasn't what it is now.
No.
So there was no social media, really. Yeah. I think what was it called?
Netscape,
and or that one that with those profiles you could make, Nexopia. Do you remember Nexopia?
No.
Oh, maybe that was, how old are you?
I'm 46.
Okay, so it was after, after your time. It was like... MySpace, it was like the after MySpace. I remember high school kids all had Nexopia. Yeah, it was a weird thing.
I missed that one.
Yeah, you didn't miss much.
What was that, the shyness? Like to a point where, and I was shy too, that's kind of interesting. And for me it was just obviously talking in front of people drove me crazy.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
It's just small groups I was okay, but the minute there was more people
I don't. I remember even thinking at a young age. I knew I was shy and I didn't want to be.
Mm.
Like I remember thinking that I was like, oh, I wish I would like look at other kids just being so outgoing and loud. And I could definitely be more outgoing with some close people. Yeah, if I had my best friend just over. I don't know. My family is pretty big.
Yeah.
I'm the youngest of six, but a blended family.
Wow.
Yeah. So both my parents were previously married, had two kids. They separated and then got together and had my sister and I.
Mm.
But we lived with my mom's kids and then my dad's kids would come over on weekends from Vancouver.
So there's a lot going on.
Oh my gosh. I was a baby, which is great. Yeah, there was a lot going on. There's a little bit of chaos in my family, I think, growing up too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot going on. So I think I was just this like little wallflower.
Yep.
A little bit just like, don't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. Just be quiet and sweet kind of thing. So, but I knew I didn't want to be shy. I remember thinking that as a kid and trying to do things as I grew up to kind of push me out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Like I remember once being a camp counselor when I was 16 for 12-year-old like a girls' camp.
Yeah, and that was a calculated decision
that you knew
you wanted to kind of practice or just get better at something or.
Yeah, and yeah, I remember in grade six being like deathly afraid of this speech. We had to do grade six speeches in front of your class.
Mm.
Oh my gosh, I did mine on glow sticks. Like, it could be on anything. I don't know, in our school, it could be on anything. I wrote my speech on glow sticks and how they work. I remember being, oh, gosh, like I still remember the anxiety I had. Like, it was just so scary. And but that was grade six. Like, you're pretty young in grade six, maybe like 12.
But it's interesting how there's people that same age that are just...
Yeah.
They look like they're comfortable. I'm sure they're not like super comfortable, but they can play it off like they're okay with the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I still get nervous talking in front of people, but I've done like some big talks now. Like I actually just spoke last month at the Report to the Community, the Calgary Economic Development. Mm-hmm. I thought there was going to be like 500 people there. There was like 2,000 people there. I didn't do my research again, as I don't do.
You're consistent.
Yeah, I am. This is so bad. I just kind of focus, I think, on like, okay, these are the questions I got to answer. I'm talking to Calgarians, okay, mm-hmm. or business owners or whoever I'm talking to, talk. And I kind of just don't really look too into it.
Yeah.
Don't want to like freak myself out, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So that camp counselor thing.
Yeah.
Was there any, besides like improving yourself, the idea of like working with youngsters that might be feeling something similar?
Yeah.
Did that enter into your thought process?
I think, yeah. Because I think I was, like, I wasn't bullied or anything growing up, but I was very shy and I feel like I didn't have a lot of friends growing up. It wasn't until maybe grade 10 that I, like, came out of my shell. I remember I became friends with this girl because we both worked at McDonald's. Megan, love you. I became really close to this girl in my grade who was like Miss Outgoing, like super, so many friends and so funny, like actually, and so cool. Mm-hmm. So I was like stoked when we both were working at McDonald's and we became buds. Mm-hmm. I was like, yes.
That was
I was like, I can be myself and I'm gonna, and yeah, and I can like be who I want to be. And yeah. And she kind of like, I don't know, just being with her, like she just, showed how effortless it could be. And it wasn't, and she was so nice, so sweet. Like she was awesome. She pulled me out of my shell. Yeah. Went to parties with her. My cool status went on. So that was, and I definitely put myself out there a little bit more. But yeah, I was super shy kid. And then being a camp counselor, though, that was probably around the same time as that grade 10. I think I was in grade 10.
Yeah.
So, and I knew probably being a camp counselor for 12-year-olds, I'm like, oh, they're way younger than me. I don't need to have nothing to be scared of.
I got this.
You know, kids just want to fit in, right? So I think maybe just being scared to like say something weird and so just don't say anything at all kind of thing, which is, I don't know. I hope, you know, that growing up in the 90s too, that was the 2000s because I was born in 89. So it was through the 90s and the 2000s, kind of that era of like, I don't know, there's one type of way to be. From the magazines and, you know, what you see, the Paris Hiltons, that kind of thing. Like that was what our,
What you were seeing.
That's what we were all seeing. Yeah. Mm. Like that's cool. That's popular. I think my friend actually asked me this the other day. They were like, do you think with social media now for kids that, you know, they're seeing so many different types of people, like it's cool to be anything, you know, it's not cool to just be Britney Spears, you know, it's cool to be Billie Eilish and it's cool to be, you know, there's people that share that they, you know, they have a platform and they have a disability and they're advocates for it and they're confident seeing that. And he was saying like, do you think it's like confusing or something? And I was like, I think that was what he was asking. And I was like, and like not good. And, you know, and I was like, I think it's probably better. Like, I don't know about social media for kids. Yeah, I don't know how that whole topic is. Yeah. I was like, I think it's great to see, it's so easy to see people and like even like celebrities, but TikTok stars, like people that aren't a conventional celebrity, you know, gain popularity and they gained it for them being them and being unique and being, you know, wearing what they're wearing or loving who they're loving. And I was like, I think that's really cool. It's being able to like show people that there's not one way to be where you can feel accepted.
Yeah.
That's it. It's like kind of like when you're growing up back then in the 90s and 2000s, there's one way that you were always attaining to be or whatever. Mm-hmm.
And if it didn't feel right, it was
or you, and if you were different from that, you were like teased. Yeah. Mm. So it's like, you just want to like, just blending in.
Yeah.
People, I hope I don't go to high schools now, but I'm just walking to high schools and check out the kids. I would hope that people feel very confident and just being who they are and it's accepted. They feel included.
Yeah.
You're not being excluded for being a bit different. Or a little, or what people would think is, odd. Yeah. Yep. I mean, seeing the kids walk down 17th Ave from the Western High School, they all look pretty funky.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot of funkiness. Yeah. I'm like, nice. They're way funkier than I was.
And I think what's interesting, it's either social maybe gives them the opportunity to explore those things and feel like they can be themselves, but I'm sure there's pressure that you and I don't understand too. Ugh. That's who knows what that looks like, but there's way more examples of what's possible.
Yeah.
Versus back in the day, you were just kind of, there's like two paths. You were like Britney or...
We were raised by American Pie and the OC, or I was, Laguna Beach. So that's the thing, is like that's what we were raised on and stuff. So, but I think it's really cool that, you know, there's even shows, TV shows now are a lot more, you know, diverse. So it's cool.
So what else is happening in high school?
High school. In high school, I feel like impacted, kind of was a starting impact of me wanting to work with kids. It was when I was in ninth grade, I have scoliosis, so my spine is, quite curved.
Yep.
I have an S curve. So there's different types of scoliosis curves that you can have. And because mine was an S curve, it's a genetic condition. And most people have like scoliosis have it maybe be pretty mild, like a 10 degree curve or a 5 degree curve. But mine was 45 degrees, and I didn't know. And oftentimes, you know, because someone, as they're developing, they're like hips will be out of line and their shoulders, or they'll kind of start getting a little bit of a hump.
Yep.
But scoliosis, it was in, I was in grade 9 at the time, and it was the summertime. And my mom's a physician, and I was... outside tanning, I remember, in grade 9 in my backyard, getting ready for, I was not in grade 9 yet. I was leaving middle school in the summertime, about to go to high school, grade 9. So I needed my tan. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to high school. And it was grade 9 to grade 12.
Yeah.
They called us Niners. I was going to be a Niner.
You got to be a tan Niner.
I got to be a tan Niner. I got to look like Britney Spears. And I remember, so I was outside, I was in a bathing suit, and then I came into the kitchen and getting a snack, something, and I dropped the snack on the floor. I think it was grapes. I probably remember it because this is a pivotal memory. And I bent over to pick it up, and my mom was in the kitchen, and she noticed that I had a hump on my back when I bent over. And my mom's like, oh my gosh, like you have scoliosis. And I was like, oh. I was like, okay. I was like, I don't feel it. Like, it doesn't hurt or anything. Mm-hmm. And my mom seemed kind of concerned. She's like, this is pretty, like, curved. And then the next, like, I think a week later, she had set up an appointment for me at the Children's Hospital in Victoria to go get it x-rayed and looked at. And it came back, it was a 45-degree curve, which is pretty intense. At 50 degrees, they usually do surgery. So they would put a metal rod in your back. Mm. And I don't think they do rods anymore. I think now if they do have to do surgery, they clamp each vertebrae.
Okay.
So I think people now that get it can bend. I'm pretty sure. Don't quote me on that.
Yep.
But back then it was a metal rod that you got like right in your back. So I wouldn't have been able to have bent like ever.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is so it doesn't get worse. And it's when people are going through puberty, your bones don't harden until 2 years after you start puberty as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that you have to wear a back brace until your bones are hardened so that it doesn't continually to progressively get worse. And then it's like, then it causes you more problems in the long run. So because mine was 45 degrees, I didn't have to have surgery, but I had to have a back brace for 2 years.
Wow.
And I remember being... So then I think a week after that, I had a back brace and I was just like, oh my gosh, what the heck happened in the last 2 weeks? So, which was hard, like it went under my clothes, but it caused kind of some issues. I had to wear it 23 hours a day. Wow. I had to sleep in it. It was really tight. It was quite uncomfortable. And I remember being just like really bummed. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to high school.
It's a lot to handle at a young age.
You're about to go into high school and then you have to wear baggy sweatshirts all the time. Well, I didn't have to, but I chose to.
Yeah.
I remember being like, I like crying to my mom. I was like, can't wear halter top. Halter top. I remember being so at the school dance. Yeah, all the, cause you had at the Commonwealth dance. I can't wear halter top. I'm never going to go to boyfriend. I remember saying that. Mom, I'm going to high school. It was a lot. It was a lot for a teenager, like a preteen, whatever, 14 or yep. whatever age I was. Yeah, 14. I wore it from the time I was 14 to 16, so grade 9 to grade 11. And I think those were really huge years for me. Really, looking back, I actually am like appreciative that that happened in a way.
Yeah.
Which sounds weird because I remember being like really like, oh, like why me? And like really bummed about it. I was really upset. I thought I couldn't play softball for those years because I had to wear, because I couldn't really, it would be hard to, bend to like get the ball and field it. So, but after, I think that was the summer when I was playing next season, like 9 or 10 months later, I was able to take it off for like 4 hours a day.
Wow.
So that was good. So I could play ball and not have to wear it.
Mm-hmm.
I had to change in a different change room in high school, which was kind of awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never got made fun of. To my face,
yeah.
which was good.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm really happy. Like I didn't really get bullied to my face at all. I think I was very lucky. I think I had some good friends around that time. And then, my personality shone through after that.
when you stop wearing it at 16, do you feel like you're,
I probably was like, butterfly,
yeah, like totally. Ready to go.
Like, yeah. Like, actually, though, you're in a case that you're coming out like caterpillar. Yeah, I probably was like, and I think it taught me a lot back then at a very young age how important it is who you are on the inside is who you need to show. It doesn't matter what tan you have and what halter top you wear. Because I really was like, I want, like, you know, I can't dress like the other kid or most of the other girls, how they're dressing is how I'm not going to dress. Yeah. And, you know, you don't really care about a whole lot of things at that age. But maybe like your friends, like doing fun stuff and maybe get it. For me, it was getting a boyfriend. Me, it was getting a boyfriend. Oh, maybe do it anyway. I don't know. I was so dramatic back then. And it taught me that things pass too. And it's just what had to happen. And sometimes there's things that are just out of your control. Yeah. And I'm really happy. I don't think I got judged for it. It's not like people thought I was any less that I had to wear this thing or that I wasn't cool anymore wearing baggy sweatshirts all the time. And yeah, it's, and then, yeah, when I came out of it, I definitely think I was very happy that, you know, I didn't have to wear it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was able to, you know, get, you know, it will bend over. It was nice to bend over again. I had to, anytime I dropped something, I had to like go down with like my knees.
Crazy.
Yeah, because it was uncomfortable for sure. Yep. And I think a lot of people deal with a lot of uncomfortable things all the time. Even I never thought that it had impacted why I work with people with disabilities and why I maybe, you know, have that interest in, you know, helping lift others up and just help with opportunities. Like not doing things for people, but really making them feel included and safe and welcome and, you know, help creating, you know, creating situations where they have an opportunity to, you know, just feel empowered, you know. I think, because I feel very, like, fortunate that, you know, that was only 2 years of my life and that I didn't have surgery. Oh my gosh. That would have been, I remember thinking though at the beginning, I'd be like, I wish I just got surgery because I didn't have to wear this stupid thing. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking that as a kid, like when you're just like, I just don't want to be made fun of and I don't want to I don't want to be different. Mm-hmm. I do not want to be different. Mm-hmm. That was basically it. Probably why I was shy and probably why I like definitely didn't want it. I was like, I want to fit in. I want to look like everyone else. I don't want to be different. And then, you know, it wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
I could still play ball and I could still have friends and my friends were awesome. It wasn't a big deal. I got through it, you know, it was 2 years of wearing it for a long time, sleeping in it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember my armpit was really itchy all the time. Yeah, I had a really itchy armpit all the time. I sweated in it a lot. Oh my God. I remember my family, we used to have a timeshare in Las Vegas. So I went to Vegas a lot as a kid. It was so much fun. I had such a fun time there as a kid. Like going to like Excalibur and like Cirque du Soleil shows. And I had to wear it once, and we went to Vegas in like summer, and I had that bad price, which was like hard. But the air conditioning inside is pretty good there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all the casinos and hotels. So yeah, yeah. No, I think that really impacted me.
More so than you think? Yeah. You know, like...
I think it brought something to my attention that when later in life, when in my kines degree, I had an opportunity to swim with a boy with cerebral palsy in a practicum and do his pool therapy. So assist him in stretching in a warm pool and with his mother too. And I ended up doing that for 7 years instead of just the 4-month practicum because I just enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
I think probably from my earlier, those earlier happenings of what I kind of experienced and that it was, you know, things, it was a uncomfortable thing. It was, you know, a brace that I had to wear. It kind of made some things a little bit more challenging, but not really.
Yeah.
So it's like just, you know, to be able to offer some assistance or accommodations for someone, you know, is just some way that I feel like I can, you know, help someone feel like they don't feel different, you know?
Yeah. So going into kinesiology out of high school, was there any like, any tie to the way the body moves and how it works based on what you're experiencing? Or was it more just you were interested in athletics healthy and moving?
I think I was also interested. So from that experience and maybe being a camp counselor, working with kids, I loved working with kids. I'm kind of a kid myself sometimes. As you can see from my branding, I love like inanimate objects with faces. So cute. I think, when I did apply for kines, after I did bio for 2 years at UVic and then was applying for the kines program, I think I like sports, like kids, and I think occupational therapy was on my mind, being an occupational therapist. Yep. So, and primarily hopefully working with children with disabilities. And yeah, and then really it got solidified when I got into the program in Calgary, moved here, and I took a adapted physical activity course at the U of C in my kines degree. Mm. And out of all the classes I took, like anatomy, physiology, like all those classes, this adapted physical activity class was my favorite. Mm. I learned so much about, you know, accommodations and, you know, how people move and how people with different abilities move. And I really liked it. And that was where I got offered to do a practicum. So I said yes. And then after that practicum was over, I enjoyed it so much. I kept swimming with Fraser and his mom, Rhonda. They're very special to me.
That's
still
a long
see
time.
Them today. Yeah, 7 years from the time he was 13 to 20.
Wild.
Yeah. And I wanted, like I said, I wanted to be an OT. So then I was like, this is my calling. And then after Kines, I graduated in 2012.
Yeah.
Applied for a master's at U of A and didn't get in.
So everything stopped.
I went to Thursday too many Thursdays.
Thursday was good.
Yeah, Thursday was so fun.
That shitty carpet on the floor.
I know. I don't think they do that anymore. Oh,
that's like, I'm old.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I don't think they have that anymore. But yeah, I think I went out a little bit too much in university. But I had fun. I was still a B student though. It's okay.
You had figured out. How did coming to Calgary? Was it just... Was it when you applied and got in, like you knew that you wanted to, like this was going to be a place for you?
Yeah. You know what's funny? At UVic, I applied for the kines degree there program. And for some reason I didn't think I was going to get in because it was a very competitive program. And I felt like kines was my calling. So I applied at SFU and U of C as well, just to be sure.
Yep.
And I ended up getting in all three. Mm. But so I ended up getting in at UVic. And I ended up still accepting Calgary. Calgary, I'd been here once when I was 18. It was like a high school graduation. trip that probably many kids in BC do.
Mm-hmm. It's a year different.
Yeah, a year difference. I had so much fun. I really thought Calgary was pretty cool. My eldest sister, or not eldest, one of my older sisters just had moved here at the time too. So she was out here. And I think I wanted an excuse to move out of my parents' home. Because if I went to UVic, I would have probably stayed at home, which is good to save some money. But I think I wanted to get, I was ready to say bye. Call you when I call you. Yeah. And I think too, you know, with being a bit shy, I don't think I was very sheltered or anything, but being shy and just not coming out of my shell, I think I was very interested in moving to a place where no one knew me. Mm-hmm. And I could, because I'd already started coming out of my shell more in grade 11, grade 12, and even in, you know, in my early 20s. I'd say I was still a little bit of a square. but I was interested in like discovering more and like figuring, you know, meeting new people. And, you know, what better way than to force it by moving to a new city? Mm-hmm. Like if you don't put yourself out there, you won't have a good time because you won't be able to make any friends. And who wants to be lonely? So I think that was really, really, really special. I think I was like, this will really, really kickstart me being outgoing.
Yeah, you knew it was going to be a challenge. Yeah. That you were going to, or the path you were going to go down was going to push you.
Yeah, and it did work. I remember in the first, at UVC, my first week there, I was like, okay, I need a friend. I need a friend here. I saw this girl. I'm still friends with her too, to this day, Nat. I saw this girl and she looked really cool. She was wearing these cool like shoes. They were like, I don't know, they were these like lace up dance looking shoes, but they were kind of like Converse, but they were bigger. I can't remember. They were really cool. And so I was like, and she was like, oh, she looks like, and she kind of was always by herself a little bit, like, but hanging around the Kines area. Mm-hmm. And I noticed her in my first couple classes. And then I saw her in lunchtime through in the atrium and I was like, hey, those are nice shoes. She's like, oh, thanks. She's like, I like your dress. I was wearing a dress that day. I was like, thanks. And he just like walked away. I was like, be cool.
Keep together.
And then in our next class, she was in my next classroom too. So she was in like three or four of my classes. I got there early and I sat down and then she ended up sitting like right by me, but not right beside me. She made sure to leave one seat in the classroom open.
Yeah.
And then, I was like, okay, I think she's feeling me as a friend. So I added Mike and Ike. So I offered her Mike and Ike. I was like, I got them free. I was like, hey, would you like some Mike and Ike? Isn't that an SNL skit or something?
I don't know. It could
be. Or a Mad TV. I was like, do you like Mike and Ike? But I had Mike and Ike. And I was like, and she's like, yeah, sure. She told me years later that she hates Mike and Ike. And then, so she was my first friend. We're still really best, really good friends today. She lives in Texas now, though. But I'll see her. She's actually coming back to Calgary in a couple weeks, so I'm going to go see her. But, now we've been friends for, like, 12 years.
Cool.
Yeah.
So that anyway, university was your...
My coming out party.
Yeah.
My university was here for me. except for me getting into OT.
So what happens then? So when you had a plan, you apply, don't get in.
Sort of plan. I think I wasn't that bummed. I kind of decided I wanted to be, being an OT would be a good path for like my interests and, you know, how I could feel purposeful and hopefully make a good income.
Yeah.
Did
you know, sorry.
Yeah.
Did you know that working with kids was going to give you that fire?
Working with children with disabilities, I think was the biggest thing. Like, I think children that, you know, I think because I felt different growing up, even though, you know, I felt different and I didn't like that I was shy and I didn't like that I had a lot of friends. I remember like I really wanted friends. Like I had three pen pals though and I had two. I did have two really close friends when I was like in my elementary school days, but one of them moved away. So I honestly felt like I had one friend like in my school growing up, like in my elementary school. And not that anyone was mean to me. No one was mean to me. I just like was painfully quiet and shy and I didn't know why. And, you know, my family life was like chaotic, like I said. So maybe just like in that chaos, just speaking up was just hard for me and being the youngest. But I knew, yeah, I knew I really, really wanted friends. And so I felt a little different then. And then when I kind of was like, okay, high school's my time, like, and all this. And then, you know, I felt like, oh gosh, this is going to set me back. This is like, I just want to hide and no one to see me. And, mm-hmm. you know, I just want to be a or a wallflower. Like I don't want people to notice me. I don't want them to talk about my back brace. Like this is embarrassing. And yeah. So I think just with people that, you know, have typically not been included, they're usually excluded, has always, I think, just had a soft spot for me. Because I felt some, I think everyone feels this way, though, growing up. Everyone just wants to fit in and stuff, so.
Yeah, just different, probably different levels of intensity.
Yeah.
You know, I think that even the most confident people are probably not that confident, but they can either put on a face and mm-hmm. move through space and it kind of looks that way, but other people, they can't hide it.
Yeah, I think we all feel that way a little bit, but I do think that was really impactful for where my life was going to go. Mm-hmm. But OT was like a thought.
Yep.
I was like, oh yeah, I was like, this makes sense, and then didn't get in. And I was like, I was kind of bummed, but I was like, oh, like school was really hard. I had undiagnosed ADHD, so it was real hard. writing papers. So I kind of was just like, oh, like I'll figure it out, you know?
Yep.
You know what? I just did 4 years or 5 years because I took 5 years to do my first degree because I went traveling in the mix there. Mm-hmm. So I, right after that first degree, I decided to, I'm going to serve. And I worked at National 17th, right? Mm-hmm. That's when it first opened. Crazy. I was like, okay, I'm done school. I just want to make money.
Yeah.
And I want it to be easy.
And just take a break? Like you were okay with just.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was okay with taking a break. Yeah, just for even like that first year while I figured it out. And I think I did apply in that first year, but then didn't get in. And I wasn't too worried about it. Like, I think I knew I had to be a straight A student to get in. Mm-hmm. And I knew I wasn't. So I wasn't shocked that I didn't get in. Mm-hmm. I looked into upgrade, like how could I go back and upgrade to get that 4.0 GPA or that A minus. And I remember I was like the counselor, the school counselor, whoever it is.
Guidance counselor.
Guidance counselor.
Maybe.
They told me that I would have to take 10 classes and get straight A's in all of them. And I was like, well, I couldn't even do that in my first degree. So I was like, I'm not going to spend more money and try to get straight A's. When I was a B student, like I was like, I did decent.
Yep.
I was like, I also had a good time. And I had ADHD. And I didn't have Adderall to help me. Now I realize I could have probably gotten those straight A's. Then I served for a bit, which I was so grateful for, like serving.
Which is interesting, right? With your personality and getting things. Yeah, like force yourself in a situation.
Yeah, being at a place at that age, like 24, but being a very hot new place.
Yep.
And having huge sections. Oh my gosh, the table sections they'd give you too, and you just got to be like quick, and you have to be like outgoing, and your tips and stuff. Like you got to be friendly, and you know, have knowledge too, and be able to speak to people.
Yeah, there's how many beers are like they came out with 100? So
there was like I think there was like 80 beers or something on tap.
What that like?
So I took jobs even serving like that. Yeah, brought me out of my shell. And by the time I moved to Calgary, like that was like I was like, okay, this is my time. Because no one had any preconceived notions of who I was. Mm-hmm. Maybe my high school friends that I would have just kept hanging out with in Victoria, but you know, I could be this like whole new person, and I could be whoever I wanted to be, and I could be who I wanted to be.
Yeah.
So it's I kind of really came into my own, and then after when OT didn't work out, I served for a bit, and then I got a couple jobs working for Cause and Effect Foundation. So it was working with children in the preschool ages with disabilities, and you'd be paired one-on-one with two. You had a child in the morning, a child in the afternoon.
Yep.
So I did that for almost 2 years.
Yep. Is it exhausting? Is it fulfilling? Is it?
It was so fulfilling.
Yeah.
It was and exhausting. But I would take the children home and be like, I only had you for 3 or 4 hours. Like, I'm sending you back to your mom. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's also like having kids is exhausting probably. I don't have kids. So, it can be tiring, but I don't know.
It filled you up?
It filled me up.
Every day you just like.
Yeah. When you see the kids meet their goals mm-hmm. and make gains. You don't see it. What I realized in that is, you know, there can be like the little gains week by week, that because they had a team of therapists, behavior therapists, speech language pathologists, OTs, PTs, that would put together their program and kind of visit the child like once a month or once every 2 months. And I was a child development facilitator. So I was with the child every day, making sure their program was being carried out, coming up with ideas, which was a very, very good skill that I learned there. You know, just having to be creative on how these kids can meet their goals and try and in very creative ways. And it's over time, over a few months, when you see where, you know, the kiddo was starting in terms of how verbal they were, or, you know, even being able to do things around the home, being able to dress themselves, and then in preschool being able to, you know, identify colors or something like that. And then you may not see week by, like, day by day or week by week, but when you go month by month in the goals that they meet, and then the OT or PT comes in and makes new goals that are a little harder, and then you look at the whole year, because it's during the school year, like September to June. And then you see where these kids are at, and then you also get to meet the parents. Typically, you work with the parents a little bit.
Yeah.
And you just see how, like, grateful they are, too. Like, they're just like, wow, like, this is just huge. Like, my kiddo, like, I remember I had one kiddo that really struggled to say I don't think he had ever said he loved, I love you. Like, that was hard for him to say. So, yeah, and then I think in the end, I'm, like, now looking way back, gosh, that was so long ago, but... Yeah, I think where we got to was him, you know, giving hugs. Cool. That's where we got to. So it was an improvement, you know, just showing, being able to show some affection. Yep. And that meant a lot to the parents. So Yeah. So I was very, very fulfilled. I think being able to see the parents, how much they appreciate it too.
Yep.
And how much they are doing also to carry out the programs and continue doing it and want to see their child succeed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, and they're exhausted as well. So
Yeah.
I felt good helping.
Does it give you a different perspective on things too? Just like either how you operate now, or just what bugs you, or what's important, or... And you did it for so long, and it seems like it just seems very intense. I feel like it's just to be in that environment for a couple of years, which is...
Yeah.
It just seems like...
It can be tiring, because there can be some... There you do see some kiddos too that have quite severe disabilities too, and can, you know, quite strong reactions to things.
Yep.
And and you gotta be creative, you gotta be patient.
Mm-hmm.
You see, sometimes I remember seeing some parents that were just like, they just seemed like almost like defeated or something, or that they were bad parents. Yeah, it puts things into perspective for sure on what is important, and, you know, what, and just showing that we just need to help people. That's it. It's like, just being able to offer, like, working on these skills, and how important early intervention is for these children making gains later in life. Their brains are so much more malleable at that age. So it's a really critical window to work on these things quite a bit. Mm. I don't sweat the little stuff too. I don't sweat the little stuff at all. Like even the big stuff, to be honest. Like, people have actually said that to me. Like, I rear-ended a car. I remember it was a couple years ago, and I was like super bombed. Crap. I was like, went to work. And then I remember one of my employees was like, oh my gosh, are you okay? I'd be so upset. And I was just like, please don't talk to me about it. I was like, I was irritated at myself, but I was like, no, it's all good. I was like, I don't, whatever. It's just stuff.
Yeah.
And I do not care about stuff, like, at all.
Mm.
Just things.
Yep.
Like, I spill on my nice clothes all the time and ruin them. And
things.
Just things. I ripped the leather in my car seat from a button, but I don't condition my car seat. So maybe I deserved it. Like, it's just stuff. Like, there's just, I really care a lot about, I'm very motivated by people.
Mm-hmm.
I've done the DISC personality tests, and where I lay, I'm very motivated by people, not by results or success or things. That's it. So it's interesting that I'm a business owner. Because I think money is important to live stress free, and that's my goal, just to be stress free. I hate stress.
So where does it start changing? So after the 2 years there, then where do you start going?
Then I applied for nursing school. So applied for nursing school because, it wasn't actually 2 years after that. Then I nannied for a family for about a year and a half, 2 years, which was really great. And then, then I kind of was like, I need to.
Was it school pulling you back, or was it that the nursing idea?
Kinesis? Well, I didn't really know what I could do with my kinesis degree. Yep. Sorry for people if you're in kinesis right now and you think you're going to get a job after. You might be serving. You could be a child development facilitator, but I couldn't make career money.
Yep.
And I felt unless I was going to do a master's in physio or OT or something else, like it's kind of a stepping stone degree.
Yep.
I would say I didn't want to be a personal trainer. So I kind of was like, oh, I'm not really making career money. Like, where's my path going to take me? I was like, I can't be a therapist, an occupational therapist. So I decided my sister's a nurse.
Yeah.
I come from a medical kind of family. My sister's a nurse. My dad's a pharmacist. My mom was a doctor.
Yep.
So, the medicine is kind of in our family. And
did you think it was, not like a default decision, but like a comfortable decision?
Like,
was your heart in it, or were you just like, I see there's a bunch of people in my world that are on this program and I could probably go there too?
I think I could do it. And I think I wasn't 100% sure I was going to love it. Mm-hmm. They had the degree holder route at UC, so I could do it in 2 years because I already had a degree, which was great. Because I didn't want to do another 4-year degree. Could feel like potentially I was helping people because nurses help people, which is what I'm motivated by and what I like doing. And maybe I could still insert my desire to work with people with disabilities.
Yeah.
I know those, it's not mainly you probably work in the hospital or there is community nursing too, but I think I was a little bit influenced by healthcare. That's kind of, those are the jobs that you get.
Yeah, for sure.
I definitely saw that growing up.
Yeah.
So applied for nursing, but this is where Milk Jar comes in. Mm. So about...
I love when we get here.
This is where... this is where we talk about... How long am I in here already?
No, you're good.
Okay,
you're
good. I told you I could talk. So this is where Milk Jar comes in. So I applied for nursing... And I got in, this is 2016. Yes, 2016. About 5 months before I applied, I was asked to, I got to go back even further to when I started making candles. So I first learned when I was nannying for that family, the mom of the woman I was nannying for, she once asked me to buy soy candles because she knew that burning paraffin candles like Bath and Body Works wasn't healthy. Mm-hmm. And she was asking if I could go pick her up some soy candles and if I knew where to buy them. And I was like, I could go look. So I had to go to a couple places. Like I could not find soy candles. Mm. I found them at Community Natural Foods and they were so expensive. I remember they were like, they were like $30 or $25. And I was like, what? And I think that's when she first asked me. And then I told her, I was like, why don't I just go to Bath and Body Works? And she's like, no, they have paraffin in them. It's not a healthy wax. There's toxins in them. Mm-hmm. You know, don't want my kids breathing that in. And I was like, okay, so I'll get you the soy candles. But then I wanted to burn soy candles. Because then once I learned that, I did some research and there's lots of peer-reviewed articles about how there's many paraffin candles. The cheap paraffin is a petroleum byproduct. There's two known carcinogens in them, toluene and benzene, so cancer-causing toxins, and they cause your eyes to be irritated, your respiratory system for many people. So just not the best to be burning and breathing in. Mm-hmm. So most common candles, like Yankee candles and Bath & Body Works candles, are usually made with paraffin. So then I decided I was going to learn to make soy candles because I loved burning candles.
You always had? Like, growing up, you always loved burning candles?
Yeah, and then sort of. I mean, when I was burning candle age, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
But it was a thing. And then all of a sudden you got educated and things started to...
Yeah.
You're like, click.
Yeah, that was it. I loved having candles. And then, and then I learned that. So I was like, okay, I'll make a change. And I was like, I couldn't afford soy candles at that age. So mm-hmm. I was like, I can learn how to make this. And then I realized I'd seen wood wicks before. And they were hard to find at the time, about 6-7 years ago, in Calgary anyways. So I decided to do some research, buy some wax, buy scents and fragrances, and then try to find wood wicks at wholesale, and then start making candles. And I would just make a pot. I bought a pouring pot, and I'd make 8 candles at a time. Yeah. And I'd give them to friends. I'd make new scents. I'd give half to friends, save half for me.
Yeah.
And then I was making candles. And then when I got the idea to start a company, it was really from a good friend of mine, Carolyn. It was during the time that the Fort McMurray forest fires were happening.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a friend that I always gave candles to. And she asked me, she's like, Holly, she's like, she worked at Kit and Ace at the time. And she's like, we're doing a little market, a pop-up market with some vendors. And all the money raised is going to go to the victims of the Fort McMurray forest fires. Would you like to sell your candles at it? And I was like, oh my gosh, like I'd love to, but like, I don't have a brand name. I don't have insurance, which I probably need. Like, especially for a burning thing. I was like, I don't have, I've never sold this before. So I couldn't do it. And then that got my wheels turning where I was like, okay, what if I did want to sell a candle? I was like, oh, like I really wish, and I could use it to support something. And that would feel really good because I really wanted to do that and be a part and raise money for the Fort McMurray forest fire victims. And I was like, oh, that were displaced, like out of their homes. And I was like, okay, maybe I should come up with a brand name. And then, you know, I'm going to nursing school, or like I've applied. I didn't know if I was in yet. Hopefully I was. I applied for nursing and I was like, you know, I am a bit bummed. I'm going into this program that didn't think was where I was going to go. And, you know, I'm no longer working, you know, at Cause Effect or, you know, working with people with disabilities. And, you know, maybe how I can feel connected to this community is I could create this company, sell a product, and donate $1 from the sale of every candle. And I'll just donate it to a nonprofit in Calgary. And I'll choose a program that Fraser would always talk about going to. Fraser's a boy with cerebral palsy that I swam with. And because he'd share so much about what he was up to. And he would always do the sit ski program and loved it at the CADS, so the Canadian Association for Disabled Skiing at COP.
Mm-hmm.
The sit ski program, he's been with Between Friends. He's spent time there, gone to Camp Bonaventure before. So I had always heard of all these cool organizations in Calgary that were really doing cool things to create inclusion. So I was like, okay, that's what I'll do. I was like, and then I'll donate $1 and then maybe I could like buy some nursing textbooks with the money I make and I'll just sell it at markets. Like I'll go to Market Collective. I was like, ooh, Market Collective is so cool. I would always go and I'd be like, man, vendors here are so cool. I was like, I want to be one of those someday. I could buy some nursing textbooks and I can feel connected to this community and feel like I'm living my purpose and at least making maybe a very small difference. But trying to assist any way I can. And I loved baking. I loved making candles. It was a lot of fun. I felt like I was pretty good at it. So So that's how the idea of Milk Jar came. And then I worked on it for about 6 months. It was so funny trying to start a business by myself. I thought I could.
The way your mind works and just like, just to get it off the ground, you were.
It wasn't hard. Like I'm very impulsive. Or decisive. Actually, yeah. But I have really good intuition.
Mm.
Like my intuition has never led me astray, ever.
So when all this is happening, when you're scheming this idea,
mm-hmm.
your gut's saying like you can trust this, like you can go down this path, like you can...
Yeah, well, I mean, the hardest... It wasn't about starting Milk Jar. That was easy. It was when I dropped out of nursing school.
So
I got in and I went. And then Milk Jar one semester... Yeah, and Milk Jar took off during that semester.
Okay.
It like, cause I had my first market collective or not, I shouldn't say took off, but like it, I brought it to market collective in February. Yeah. I started nursing school in January. Mm-hmm. I applied for the market collective and I sold out of 260 candles, which was a lot.
That seems like a big number.
It was like, I think like $5,000, I think at the time.
Did you have a number going in? Like if you,
I think it was that.
Would you have said to yourself, you know, if I could make $1,000 over this first, you would have been okay? Or like $500?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there was like a loose number in your head.
I had to make candles after the market. Like I, on my, because I made them on my stove at the time. So each burner, you could make 8 candles a pot.
I love how you know the math.
Yeah, 8 candles a pot and how many burners? You had 6 or something? 2, 4, 6?
4.
I don't know, 4 of them? Yeah, like that's how I made, because I didn't have a wax melter. Yeah. It wasn't already melted. I had to melt it on a double boiler on my stove. So I'd have to go back each night and label more candles, wake up at 4 in the morning and like label them all and then go to the market and work the market. Mm-hmm. But it was really, really cool. People were stoked. Not many people had seen a woodwick before. And there wasn't really a known candle company in Calgary, not much before then.
Did you have your, like that first market, did you have your story kind of out there yet? Or was it people just like...
They knew that a dollar was donated. That was it. Well, I didn't even know my story. I guess that was the story then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was... Because it wasn't on boxes or... I remember I had brown boxes that I think I put a label on or stamped or something.
People were interested in your approach.
Yeah. I did say that a dollar is donated for the sale of every candle. Yep. And we're supporting Cats Calgary this first year. And I didn't really give a why. I just did it. And that's it. It was funny. I remember a few years later when I took the ATBX program. It's like an entrepreneurship, like accelerator kind of program where you learn from other businesses and you learn how to like what's your mission and your business pitch and all this. And I remember getting asked like, why do you donate to like nonprofits, like that support children with disabilities? What's the reason? Like, you know, it's a candle. Like, I would think you would donate to like sustainability or light or energy or something like that because it was a candle. Like, it was associated. Mm-hmm. Like, how does the candle come into play? I was like, oh, I don't know. It doesn't really, like, the candle's just the vehicle for what I wanted to do. The candle is just the vehicle for really what I wanted to do. It wasn't the other way around.
Yeah.
Like, how can I attach something to this candle? Yeah, and just find a cause. Yeah, like the cause was already the main thing.
So after you had that crazy experience, you dropped out of school.
Yeah. Luckily, I was having a hard time. I remember like crying a lot because I was like, I don't drop out of school. Like, what do I do? Like, I really want to do this company. It seems cool. I'm overwhelmed. Nursing school's hard, but it's a good job. Yeah. Like, and I don't drop out of school. Like, that's like not an idea of me that I had. But I ended up deferring it for a year. So it didn't feel, it was an easy way to not go back to school, but like not feel like I just wasted or gave up a semester in case Milk Jar didn't work out. Cause I was like, I'm not a business owner. Like, I don't do that sort of thing.
But your intuition's saying that there's something there.
Yeah, like it was, I knew, and I think talking to people too, it was like, I think my dad said this to me. He's like, nursing school will always be there.
Yeah.
A business might not. Like, if you do the nursing school, stop Milk Jar, do the 2 years of nursing school, because it would have been way too hard to have done, ran a business and done school. Like, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
He's like, nursing school will always be there. Like, you can always, like, it's not going anywhere. But like a business that people want or like that people are interested in and that you seem excited about, like, you know, you got a window, maybe.
Yep.
Maybe.
Yep.
And I didn't know if candles were going to blow up or something. And candles definitely have blown up more. Like, I've seen there's been a lot more candle companies coming out, which is awesome, especially during the pandemic too. So then I decided to defer for a year. Which was really cool. And see what Milk Jar, have a Christmas season, see what I could do with it.
Yep.
Try to make an online shop. Mm-hmm. I built my website in my history and nursing class.
What'd you use? What program?
Squarespace.
Yeah, perfect.
We've had it.
You still have it?
It was up until February of this year or March of this year when we rebranded. We've now switched to Shopify.
Like I said before we... I said I'm a marketing person.
Yeah.
I've built, I don't know, 25, 30 Squarespace sites in the last 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And one giant Shopify website. Those two platforms are the best.
They're awesome.
Like yeah. Squarespace to start, and then when you need to scale, Shopify's right there.
Yep. And that's what we did now. So, cool. But my marketing team now definitely spruced up the Squarespace that I started mm-hmm. like 6.5 years ago.
But how cool is it that you can do it yourself?
I did it myself.
Full e-com does it like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's good. And it's almost better you doing it a little bit at the beginning because then you're writing your story and you're.
Oh, yeah.
Like you're the only one that can speak authentically to it. So. Yeah.
This part is like fascinating to me is kind of your why and your purpose around mm-hmm. this business because it's like there's a lot there. Yeah. So you're 6 years in.
Yeah.
When you decided to go all in, like trusting your gut and intuition, mm-hmm. Were you ready for what was going to happen? Did you know like up and down? Did you know like?
Yeah. No. I have no idea.
Like to get to 19 people.
I know.
Like that's whatever your sales are, I'm sure they're great. But having 19 people work for you is a big thing.
Yeah.
And having a big space to work in. So like when you're dreaming, when you're putting this together, did your head start to wander down that path? Or was it just as you saw things grow, you kept on being creative? No,
I think it's grown so quickly that I've just kept up. Mm. Honestly, like the demand has been there and... Well, I mean, I never saw it or had the plan.
Yeah.
I have the plan pretty close to when it happens. Yeah. Like it's, and I have like when it moved out of my home, I would say that was probably the hardest business decision, like leasing a space.
Just taking the overhead.
Yeah. It was first buying my first wax melter. Mm-hmm. It was first expense because there was like $3,500.
It's a real number.
Yeah. And it was like, I think at the end of the first year and I was like, okay, if I'm doing this, like I don't mm-hmm. have a wax melter. And then I was like, oh, big expense, but you know, $3,500. But then it was leasing a space and signing like a 5-year lease.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm really doing it. But at that time too, like it was bringing me so much joy. Like it's profited since the start, like no matter how small it was, but I always was able, I had a bookkeeper from the start to help mm-hmm. me out. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm pretty good with money. I'm like, I've invested a lot back into Milk Jar. Yeah. I didn't take pay for 3 years, I think, but it paid for my rent because it was in my home.
Yeah.
So there was ways that I could kind of have it pay for things, but mm-hmm. I didn't take like a paycheck for 3 years. And then even the last three years, I took very small like pay, just to like maybe around $40,000, like nothing crazy. Like I paid managers more because I needed them, mm-hmm. but you know, just to ensure that Milk Jar was able to invest and continue to grow, like buy that wax melter, and you know, I can live within my means. Like Milk Jar made it like 2 years ago. Like I feel like everything's a cherry on top. So even when people ask me like, what's your 3 and 5 year plan? I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like maybe there's something. I was like, I don't like, it could stay the exact same forever and I'd be so happy, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
That, not having that plan, I feel the same way. Like I can't have this idea and put a date to it.
Yeah.
It feels kind of weird. So what do you do?
I know, want to know your 3 to 5 year plan.
So then they can just like scribble something down and be like, hey, here's my thing. But
we're going to open a second location in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember what my number one goal is in life?
People.
Yes, I love people, but to live stress-free for myself.
Mm.
To support people. My number one, what brings me joy is people.
Yeah.
What my goal is for myself is to live calm, stress-free, not to, like, I guess my career goals. Just try really hard to, you know, and just live within my means and be comfortable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need anything fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And while also one of my, I would say my biggest goal at Milk Jar now is to try to pay living wages. So what is that, 22?
Is that what it is?
An hour now?
Yep.
Which is wild. Like I've been in places, man, like I put $10,000 on a credit card when I started Milk Jar And before that, I think I had like 10 grand of already credit card debt. So I think I had like there was a time I had 20 grand of credit card debt, mm-hmm. which isn't as much as what some people have had.
Still and like, a big number though.
Yeah, I was like 27 at the time and went on some trips and wasn't paying off my credit card as quickly. I've been really good with money in the past, but there have been times when, it was when I got out of the serving industry, actually. I got in and then I started working at Cause and Effect and I was making more an hour, but I was missing the tips. Yes. And I all of a sudden have my evenings and weekends free.
Mm-hmm. Like, you're out.
Oh my gosh, I spent so much money going to restaurants and going out finally. And I was like, I can go out all the time, but I didn't realize like I got so much social interaction from serving on a Friday night.
Yep.
So I felt like I was kind of out and about.
There,
my friends could come visit me at work and I was making money.
Mm-hmm.
But now I was not even making money, but I was like spending like crazy. Yeah. So yeah, I going to like music. Like I love going, like being out and about. I love music. I love going to festivals and stuff. So yeah, back then I spent a little bit of money. So, and then with Milk Jar starting a business, I think it was about 10 grand kind of putting it on credit cards. So but that kind of stress, I've had that kind of stress. I'm happy I don't have to be in that kind of stress anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want, I know what it does to you. I know what it does to people. It's all you think about. When you're in that kind of thing, and it's always on your mind and, I don't know. I would just love to pay my employees, kind of remove hopefully some of that financial stress that they might have. Cause it's not fun for people to be in. Like affects you mentally.
For sure.
You know?
Yep. When you've been growing this in a short amount of time,
mm-hmm.
do you have like a guiding light? Do you have something that you're always focused on? Is mm-hmm. there, whether it's, I don't know what it might be, but is there something that's pulling you down a direction besides your intuition? Or are you just seeing things and reacting? It's like, the reason I'm asking is because in a short amount of time, you've created something obviously pretty special.
Yeah.
And, is it just because is it because your purpose was so rooted on, like deeply rooted early that just you continue to go down that path? Or is there just something...
I just think it's, we can only do, I would say we do have a guiding light. And I that's the thing. I think even when people ask me my 3 to 5 year business plan, I
want to ask you.
I actually do have, an idea for where I want to go and what I want to happen. But it doesn't really have anything to do with the business. Like the business is going to help it happen.
Yep.
So the business does have to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to come up with new workshops and we got to come up with new candle scents and stay current and grow our team a little bit because the company is our awareness. It's our people follow Milk Jar.
Yep.
So it's our platform.
Yeah.
But I really want to, and I've said this the last couple of years, I really want to inspire other businesses to hire inclusively as well.
Cool.
I would say that's because we can only hire so many people. I wish I could hire everyone. But we need to get other businesses to start like getting on board and being more diverse and inclusive with their hiring practices. And, it's, in my opinion, I've done a few talks and I think it's silly not to. I've had experience, being around and working with people with disabilities before. So I think it came very natural to me.
Mm-hmm.
But even when I reached out to Inclusion Alberta, so there are service providers out there that help businesses. I didn't know where to start. I just it was 3 years into Milk Jar when we moved into the industrial bay that we're in now. And I had one employee, I was going to hire a couple more. And then, I knew, I was like, I got to make this, let's take it a step further. Like let's really walk the talk, we donate and we say this is important, but how I can do that, I'm the decision maker in my company. So this is the privilege I have to give to others, and this is my responsibility only.
Yeah.
Like the government's not telling me to do this, and I was like, and it's the business owners that need to care about this. And I was like, I know there's so many roles at Milk Jar that can absolutely be filled and have someone with a disability be very successful at.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how to even start. So I reached out to between friends who we were donating to, I think at the time, or that we donated to them the year before. So my contact there, and I just asked, I was like, hey, I'm looking at hiring some employees, interested in hiring inclusively. Like, do you know where I can find candidates? Like, how can I get resumes?
Mm-hmm.
So, And then I learned that there were service providers like Inclusion Alberta, Gateway Association. They're all over the country. Mm. And they are government funded, and they connect employees looking for employment with businesses. And it has been so great. Like they help with the onboarding, with pulling resumes. They come and see the job that you have. They do kind of interview you. They see the job that's there, and then kind of skills that are required. And then they grab some resumes that they have, and then they can set up the interviews, and then they help with their onboarding. Like we have a couple of our employees had like an aide come with them for the first month. Mm. And then when we were like, then when they were ready, we were like, yeah, they don't need to come anymore. Yeah. Mm. Lauren and Amanda were my first. They're actually June 10th and 11th will be their 3-year.
No way.
Yeah. So they've been with Milk Jar ever since. Crazy. And they're my longest employees. They are amazing. Like they add so much to Milk Jar, as everyone does. And yeah, their work ethic is great. Like it's incredible, like that, you know, the friendships that have formed at Milk Jar. Like Lauren was in the competing in Special Olympics for curling. She was on the curling team up in Sherwood Park for the Alberta Games just a few months ago. And three of our employees, like her coworkers, went up, drove all the way up there and got a hotel, stayed overnight and made signs and cheered Lauren on to three of her games. And they won. Mm-hmm. Lauren's team won the gold. And I remember Lauren called me. It was Sarah, Noah, and Ariel, I believe, that drove up there and went. And Lauren called me and was like, no one has ever watched my games before, and was like almost crying and was like, I was so excited. She's like, I had to tell you, like, they came all the way here. Like, they take the time to come watch me. And I'm like, yeah, Lauren, like, yeah, that's awesome. Like, we knew they were going to go. And, you know, they're your friends and they care about you, and what you're doing is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, being able to, you know, compete for the national team. So it's really cool to see what's kind of happened. And I'm happy to create those connections and have more people have experiences with people with disabilities and see that they are just like us. And that they want the same things. They want to work. Mm-hmm. They live on their own. They help themselves. Like they take the bus, like they're just like us, and they're just human beings, and everyone does deserve to work, I believe. And I think it's a very important even skill to have coworkers, that experience of having like a friendship that's professional. And be able to provide for yourself, to be able to offer your skills and gifts to society, I think is really important.
Did you know that you would kind of have this platform? You know, that you've built this business, and now you're passionate about this. You have this kind of direction or just this idea in your head.
Yeah.
It's interesting how it happens, right? You're going from like not focused on products and sales, like now you're something bigger.
Yeah.
And that's kind of getting to the purpose and kind of your driving force behind you.
Yeah. But I think that's the reason why I would keep selling a candle. I don't know if I'd sell a candle if it didn't have... didn't have a purpose of, you know, helping people, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Like if it didn't have something more to do with it than just the product.
Yeah.
Like I don't think I wouldn't have created a company.
Yeah.
Because I just don't see myself as that. I mean, it's and like the candles are quite good. So
there's that.
They're quite good. Like I am also good at what I do. I'm good at making them, but I think it's really what it drives it, and it's what gets me out of bed. I've said this once before, like you have hard days in business. Like running a business is hard, but it's so rewarding, especially this one. Like learning to be a leader is hard. Like working with employees can be hard sometimes. It's just working with people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what differences you have. It's literally just people are hard sometimes. Yeah. But we're unique, and that's what makes it beautiful. But it's like there's times when, you know, you have to make some tough decisions, whether it's being with people, whether it has to do with money and finances, and you just have to be aware. And then there's all these people that are thinking like, you got to do this and you got to do that. And it just gets, and or, you know, something happens where, you know, you lose a client or, you know, there's uncertainty with how much, what's going to happen with the recession or what have you. So you have bad days, but what gets me out of bed is knowing that, you know, this workplace is more than just selling candles.
Yeah.
It is like Lauren, we've had so many employees that were unemployed before they came to Milk Jar, and they really struggled to get jobs before. Or even if they weren't employed, they were very unhappy at their other jobs. Like, they weren't treated well, they weren't appreciated, and, you know, or they were teased for maybe their differences. And they feel very safe and very welcome at Milk Jar, and they feel like they can be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the best employees. Like, we have such respect. They know I respect them, and I feel like they really respect me too.
Yeah.
So it's such a win-win to be that way. And it's the reason why I get out of bed is like them finding a place where they can create, they can grow, they can offer their skills, and they are just feel happy to come to you. And they have friendships too out of it. It's really
good.
Yeah, it's a good, it's Milk Jar is such a great spot. It's such a great place to be. Yeah, I really love it.
This has been really cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jeff. This was great, and letting me babble.
It's awesome, because I told you before we started, I said, the more you talk, the better, because I don't have to say anything. So I end the show with one question.
Okay.
When I say Calgary, where does your head go?
Stampede.
No way.
It's because I'm from BC. It's because I'm still technically, I was like, I guess I'm a Calgarian now. I consider
myself
one.
Yeah, you've been here for
like
a long time.
12 or 13 years. But still, Calgary Stampede. Mm-hmm. It was, well, it's what brought me here when I was 18.
You showed up for Stampede.
I showed up for Stampede when I was 18 years old.
So you had a time.
Oh, yeah. With three girlfriends.
Crazy.
I went to Coyotes. Mm-hmm. Remember Coyotes?
Yeah, of course I do.
Yeah. When I moved here later, it wasn't here anymore. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was,
Yeah, you saw it on its heyday.
Yeah.
thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.